Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz.
I'm the other half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
We're super excited to be in America's Top Hat, Montreal, this week with our good buddies at Noir Grey, the legendary Italian restaurant in one of our favorite cities of all time.
Is America's Top Hat a real thing?
Yeah, America's Top Hat, Montreal, Canada.
If I were to Google America's Top Hat, would I find Montreal?
I mean, try it, but trust me.
Second part of our show, we dip into our archives and go back to one of our favorite performances with Harmar Superstar.
Legend.
Definite legend. Catch him on tour right now, performing some very cool standards anywhere in America. Not in the Top Hat, though.
Not in the Top Hat.
More like the Beard section.
The Beard section. Well, sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Looking good.
Girl, I know it's hard to lie when you're working at your 9-to-5. So just think of me till you
get off tonight.
You'll be my lover, sweet baby mother. There ain't no other who can break me off like you do under the cover. Baby mother, there ain't no other. Singing black pantsuit, sexy pumps. Take me out to a power lunch. Tisk tisk, naughty with the bits. A briefcase full of sexy tricks. Black pantsuit, sexy pumps. Take me out to a power lunch. I'm appetized looking at your thighs. And what's this touch in mine? You'll be my lover, sweet baby mother. There ain't no other who can break me off like you do under the cover. Baby mother, there ain't no other. Deeper, deeper, I can feel your beeper. Deeper, deeper, I can feel your beeper. Deeper, deeper, I can feel your beeper. Deeper, deeper, I can feel your beeper.
Well, I know you treat me best when I'm sitting at my desk. But the tricks you pulled last night put me to the test. So love and laughter, baby father. There ain't no other who can break me off like you do under the water. Baby father, there ain't no other.
Black pantsuit, sexy pump. Take me out to a power lunch.
Name is sexy, my Rolodex. I'm shaved so close, you're tasting wax.
Black pantsuit, sexy pump. Take me out to a power lunch.
Silk and lace in my database. Baby, I want to interface.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz, coming to you from blustery Montreal with Lisa, Emma, and Ryan of Nora Gray, and soon to be Elena. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with the easy stuff. Where are y'all from? Y'all Montreal born and bred?
Yeah, we're all from Montreal, all three of us.
Who's your favorite hockey team?
That's a tough question
well,
right now.
Yeah, usually it's the Canadians.
Usually it's the Canadians.
This year,
yeah, we're not
so much.
Nah, we're like Montreal's a you know it's you're from Philly.
Yes.
So you like you know you understand what it's like to be a diehard fan, but also hate your team
100%
with passion and be like absolutely a fair weather fan. But
I really only watch if they're winning.
It's a fair weather fan unless someone else is talking shit on.
Yeah, of course.
Because then I'm like whoa. I sweat it.
Yeah.
So growing up in Montreal, what was it like? You know, Montreal's gone through so many culinary changes in the last decade, but 20, 30 years ago, talk to me about what the scene was like here. What was it like growing up? What was food like in your houses?
I feel like, well, I'll start. You know, I grew up in the suburbs, like Irish Catholic, Irish Protestant family. Mm-hmm. So food for me was like, you know, like roast beef and mashed potatoes kind of vibe. Wasn't super adventurous. Like I didn't grow up in an adventurous food household.
Right.
You know, like tuna casserole, like those kind of like old, like very like 70s inspired kind of cooking. Although like I think that my mom's a pretty good cook. It's just like was not adventurous at all. And going out to eat was like, I don't know, you know, a lot of chain restaurants when I was a kid.
Yeah. Emma, Lisa?
Well, my father is super into cooking and food. And, you know, my mom was the one who would cook kind of weeknight. And she's good at it. Like, she makes tasty food. She absolutely hates it. Because, you know, it was the food that had to be rushed on the table right after school and all that kind of stuff. So she doesn't, and she doesn't have the patience for it. But my father has all the patience in the world for cooking and absolutely loves it. And so I would spend time with him on Sunday afternoons in the kitchen. He'd be listening to the CBC with, like, the opera blaring. Mm. And we would, you know, make lasagna or pizza or... He was also super into making curries and stuff, so which I actually never ate at that time. I was...
You're like, thanks, Dad.
I was a really picky eater. I only liked really boring food as a kid. So it really amazed my parents when I decided that I wanted to become a chef.
I'm sorry, what are you going to become? You know that you can't just eat pasta.
To be fair, Emma's still a picky eater.
Yeah, I'm still kind of picky.
And for me, I grew up... again, my mother cooked every meal... Very healthy. I grew up on the kitchen counter watching my mom cook every day, and it was a great experience. I was open. We went out for dinner a lot.
Yeah.
Living downtown Montreal, I was exposed to a lot of different types of food. My cousins own Chalet Barbecue, so I ate a lot of chicken, which is like an institution in Montreal.
It's the best chicken.
It's the best chicken. So I
rotisserie chicken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The best rotisserie chicken, which is like a very like Quebec kind of thing.
I love it. It's fantastic. Yeah. We ate a lot of that when we come up.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's like a staple of the diet here. It's like people talk about poutine and things like that all the time, but like rotisserie chicken is probably more like more people would eat that on a regular basis for family dinners than probably go out for poutine with the family. You know?
Yeah, it's more like my dad's
that's where I said chain restaurants, but what I was thinking was actually an offshoot of Chalet Barbecue, which is called Swiss Chalet,
which is the same. They started Swiss Chalet as well, and Harvey's. So yeah.
Oh yeah, Harvey's legendary.
Yeah, so that was all all stemmed from Chalet Barbecue actually.
So for those who might be unfamiliar with the Montreal dining scene, you know what? Not now. Not as, like, the culinary destination has become, but, like, what was it, let's say, 10, 15 years ago? Or even as recent as 5 or 10 years ago?
Oof. Well, I mean, like, for us, like, for me growing up as a kid, my favorite thing was to go out to dinner. You know, mm-hmm. we would always go out for my mom's birthday or my dad's birthday, and we always went to the same kind of Italian restaurant. There was one in particular on St. Mark called Bocca d'Oro. And it's that old school Italian, like white tablecloth, the the guys in the suits with the bow ties, and it's only men serving.
Sure.
And they would do like veal marsala and that kind of stuff. And eventually, like, I mean, the food scenes, I think, started changing here about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, when I, well, I worked at Globe in 2000 or mm-hmm. 2003 is when I started. So exactly 15 years ago.
And for those who don't know what Globe is.
So Globe was an institution in Montreal for many, many years. It's where Fred Morin and David McMillan of Joe Beef fame kind of got their start
mm-hmm.
In the Montreal restaurant scene. And that's where I met them. And they kind of made my career. They definitely gave me a huge push. So
I think it's important to mention, like, Globe is was the place that for celebrities. It was the hotspot. It was during the supper club era when for a long time when David and Fred were at the helm of that restaurant, it was considered the best restaurant in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, it had like doormen and, you know, like it had like tables of gangsters and like, you know, Formula One weekend.
Yeah.
Like,
at 11 o'clock they would have bottle service and they
sure.
would do a late yeah. night menu and all this kind of crazy.
So super casual, right?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Everybody's ridiculously good looking.
Yeah.
And so, when they came on the scene and when things started to change, how did you feel? Like, did it start to excite you? I mean, I know you were cooking with them, but
I was living in New York at the time.
You were living in New York.
I lived in New York for 6 years.
Oh, so New York was sort of already doing its thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if we go back a little bit, like Montreal, obviously, as a city that was colonized by the French, there's a great history of dining in the city. You know, someone that we mentioned, my mentor, Dave McMillan, talks about it all the time, about how, you know, there's this amazing culinary history and we've been eating well and drinking well in Quebec for 400 years or in Montreal for 400 years. And it's true. It's 100% true. There is a food culture that has been here for longer than probably anywhere else on this continent. And I mean, not a food culture, but a dining culture.
Sure.
And so that's always existed. Somewhere along the way, I think that, you know, the old guard shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, like that supper club movement in the early 2000s was certainly like part of that shift of cultures of like, you know, the old stale kind of white tablecloth Italian places that Emma was referring to. That kind of led to like fun, you know, bottle service, like models in tight dresses serving, that kind of thing. And then, you know, a restaurant like, or very fine dining, you know, Tokay, those
yeah.
kind of things. And then all of a sudden, you know, in 2001, I think, you know, Pied de Cochon opens.
Sure.
And they're like doing something totally different. It's like, you know, lumberjack food.
Yeah, he had also been a chef at Globe. So when he left Globe, Dave took over.
Right.
And he opened PDC.
But Martin Picard.
Martin Picard, sorry. So when he left Globe and he started PDC, that's where the change started. Because he was like, I'm done with this like club style atmosphere with
yeah.
restaurants. I want this. This is like a chef's restaurant where chefs will come
yeah.
to eat.
So how did you all three meet? And where did you meet?
We all met at Liverpool House.
Okay.
So Liverpool House is Joe Beef's sister restaurant.
Sure.
Opened in September of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Their second restaurant.
Yeah. I had been working at Joe Beef.
Mm-hmm.
I was hired by David there. And the idea was that I would work at Joe Beef and learn how they worked and then move over to Liverpool House because they'd already started construction on that. And then Emma came on board because she'd already worked with Fred for years and had been away in London working at a Michelin star restaurant there. And she came back to Montreal just about a week before Liverpool House was set to open. And, you know, Fred kind of was like, yeah, no, you gotta come
on board. I actually begged Fred for a
job. You're like, please, I've learned
I was
so
like,
much.
I need to leave London and I only want to work for you if I come back to Montreal. Can you please find me something to do? And he had already staffed the kitchen to what he thought was like fully staffed. And I was there to like lend a hand, be a tournant. But after 3 months, he moved the chef of Liverpool House over to Joe Beef and I became the chef of Liverpool House.
And so what was it like during that time? I mean, this was the first time
you
two were working together.
It was crazy.
I mean, I would say even living in New York, the reputation of Joe Beef and Liverpool House made their way down.
I think that what people maybe, you know, like what gets lost maybe in like the lore of Joe Beef is that like they were like there's a real ethos behind those restaurants. It started out really small and, you know, like with a focus on quality and, quality of ingredients and quality of service and like, you know, and with from a really good place with a lot of love. And the restaurants are actually still run that way today. And that's amazing considering how big they are.
And how much did that impact you when you started to think about your own spot?
Like I can't. For sure. There was no bigger influence in my career than the 5 years I spent working for those guys.
So when you start thinking about your place in the Montreal culinary scene, you're at Liverpool House, you're working for this greats. When do you, the three of you, start thinking maybe we're going to branch off on our own?
Well, for me, I always knew I wanted to open a restaurant.
And were you upfront about that with them? Like, did they know at some point you were going
to... Dave, like, approached me after maybe... He didn't talk to me for, like, the first 6 months I worked there. But then, like, after month 8 or 9, he, like, sat me down one day and he was like, listen, I know you're gunning for your own place. I don't know when you're going to do it, but, like, I will support you 100%.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah, which was amazing. He was like, whatever I can do, like money or not or whatever you want. And I was like, awesome. I knew at that point I wasn't ready, but I did know at that point already, after only working with Ryan for a little while, that I wanted him to be my front of house partner because I knew that that's what I was missing kind of thing. I knew I needed somebody who was like sommelier and barman and that kind of like meter and greeter, rememberer of names.
Oh, yeah, that's
I'm bad at that.
That is key. And Lisa, how did you get involved?
So I met Ryan at Liverpool House. I was a customer.
Sure.
And we started dating. And so Dave one day took me aside and was like, hey, you want a job? And so I was like, sure, no problem. And at that point, it was a real skeleton crew at Liverpool House. There was Emma with two other people in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Ryan behind the bar, one busboy, and two servers, which if you went now, it's crazy. So yeah. I was the first person to do to see people and host. And Dave said to me, I know you're going to open your own restaurant with Ryan, so why don't you start practicing?
So this is before we'd ever really actually even talked about it. You know, Dave kind of has this ability to see into the future.
And Ryan and I talked about it for sure as a couple. We were like, okay, we want to open a restaurant. Yeah. And it was just kind of, it just moved forward from there. Like, we just, all three of us kind of came together. It was like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
We just were like, this makes sense.
Yeah. And like, everybody fulfills a role.
Yeah.
Like a necessary role. We each have our own job. We're not really stepping on each other's toes very much.
Especially the beginning. Like, we opened this, we modeled this place, and like we modeled our business essentially after the way that Joe Beef was modeled.
Sure.
Which was like, okay, well, we're three owners. You know, each of us will take care of our own end of the business and we'll also all work in the restaurant. So, you know, the first like 3 years here, I was behind the bar every night and took care of the wine program. Emma was in the kitchen every night.
We're still here. We're still here 4 nights a week. Yeah.
No, but I mean, you know,
we step back a lot.
No, but physically, what I mean is we were physically like working positions, you know, for the first 3 years. There wasn't a bartender. There wasn't a hostess. There wasn't a maitre d'. You know what I mean? There wasn't
there was me and three other people, and now I have four people, so like I can step back. I don't actually have to be there. There's an extra person to expedite if they need it or lend an extra hand for plating, that kind of thing, which is what I was doing before.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break and then we're going to talk about some of those early days and Montreal's response to modern Italian take on Italian food that was not. I imagine there weren't old men in suits and bow ties here, right?
Not at all.
We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. .org.
Come down, I won't come back.
Snacky Tunes. We are here with Lisa, Emma, and Ryan at Nora Gray as the sun sets at a very late 4 p.m. So in the early days of Nora Gray, you know, you've been open now for about 6 years?
Six, seven years.
Yeah, almost 7 years. So this is back in like 2010. What was the initial response, given that when you thought of Italian food in Montreal, it was very much of like the white tablecloth or red sauce joints? How do people react right away? And also, let's not forget where you're located and describe to people where that is.
Well, I guess it's downtown. It's just south of the Bell Center, so we really are downtown. Right. But we're on a block where there's literally an abandoned building next to us, yeah. And on the other end, there's a tiny little art gallery. And when we were first opening, there was a grocery store that had just opened.
It looked like a nice grocery store.
Yeah, it's nice. But other than that, you would drive by here and you'd be like, meh, this block is
The Uber was pulling up this morning, I was like, okay, I'm just going to trust it. Yeah. I see apartments.
Yeah, a lot of times people would come in, they're like, yeah, our Uber driver was like, no, there's no restaurant there. And we're like, or people come and they're like, I've driven by here a million times.
There's no
sign. You know, like, yeah, you have no sign. And, you know, they're walking to a full restaurant and I'm like, yeah, well, you know.
Like, but it's cozy. It's like tucked away.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, I think the idea is like when we found this location, the thing was like, it's like 5 minutes from everywhere, but in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Which is great.
Like, yeah. Which is amazing.
Sort of great. Because there's also not. It's not like Restaurant Row.
No,
like it's a special destination in many ways.
And you know, you said that's the word destination. We, you know, again, like coming from the restaurants where we were, like it's, you know, they went to a neighborhood that was, you know, largely underserved by restaurants, and it was completely a destination. And we just figured, you know, this was an up and coming neighborhood, and we would just let the neighborhood up and come all around us.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which it has. You know what I mean? And like this is like the largest single development of any neighborhood in Canada has been happening in this neighborhood for the last like 6 years.
And so when you opened, what was the response? Were people coming to seek you out? Did people know that because of your pedigree you were going to do something special, or Was it word of mouth?
Well, yeah, I mean, because we'd worked at Liverpool House, and Dave and Fred are so well known, and their restaurants are so well known in the city, we had garnered a following. And, you know, like, the clients that were at Liverpool House had become kind of our clients as much as Fred and Dave's, because, you know, we were taking care of their baby, kind of. So, you know, there was great anticipation. You know, there was 4 months between the time we left Liverpool and the time we opened Nora Gray. And that was, like, a really good time for the momentum to build.
I think it's also important to mention that at that time, it's like, we're talking about, you know, 2000 and, like, early 2011. It was the boom of, like, people opening restaurants hadn't really happened yet.
Sure.
It was, like, right at the tipping point of that. Like,
and you know, tipping point of social media as well.
Yeah, like, yeah, like sure. I had Twitter, Instagram wasn't, I don't think, a thing. I mean, like, we didn't have an Instagram when we opened here. Like, I had just gotten a Twitter account, you know what I mean? Because, like, Dave made me get one when I was working at Liverpool House, just to kind of satisfy the fact, like, so that I could be in on, like, his, like, jokes that he was making on Twitter and, like, retweet to, like, the...
I need
like,
someone quote. To write.
Yeah, he was like, hey, yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know, what's interesting is, like, if a couple years later, I mean, everyone was opening, like, their own restaurant.
Sure.
And, like, the small kind of, like, you know,
chef-owned,
run restaurant scene kind of exploded here. And I think that we, you know...
We're also... we were three young Montrealers. We had a lot of people that knew us and wanted to come and see us. Not only our families, but our friends. The network was quite large, not only from the restaurant business, but just being Montrealers, because the city is a village.
Yeah, I mean, never more friends than when you're young, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's crazy. So, I know that your father cooked Italian food, but... was that just always the idea that you're going to do an Italian restaurant? Like, how did you land on that?
No, well, that's the thing that's funny is that my entire career, save one job, up until opening Nora Gray, had been in French food.
Mm.
But we had decided to go Italian because there wasn't that kind of hip, young vibe in an Italian restaurant in this city.
That thing did not exist. Like at
that
all.
Time,
not even close.
It was Italian restaurants run by Italians, and it looked Italian.
But they were serving like North American style Italian food. They weren't even serving like the stuff that their grandmothers would make.
Right.
They were serving like North American style Italian food, which is
like not
very
regional.
Dissimilar from what you get in Italy.
Yeah.
And so, would you say that you set out to make a modern Italian restaurant?
Yeah, that reflects what you can eat when you're in Italy, you mm-hmm. know? And like I said, that didn't exist in Montreal at the time. It certainly exists now.
But, I mean, we were coming from a place, you know, where we learned, like, you know, it's kind of like... But, like, the farm-to-table cooking, mm-hmm. you know, and seasonal cooking, more importantly. You know, so we're working with local seasonal ingredients, and we thought, like, why can't we apply that to Italian food, like, the way that it exists in Italy? Mm-hmm. And that really wasn't being done. You know, like, you had this, like, non-regional specific Italian-American kind of, like, old-world Italian... That was the idea of Italian restaurants here, 100%. Yeah. I don't think there was one that existed without white tablecloths.
Because the thing is about a lot of the Italians that live here, and I would say anywhere, is that they don't go out to eat Italian food because they get it at home.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they get at home is way better than what they're going to get in a restaurant. And so... The compliments or the comments that I got a lot at the beginning of Nora Gray was exactly that, was like, wow, this is like my grandmother's. Like, my grandmother's meatball is exactly like this. Like, I've got tears in my eyes.
Or people would be like, I don't understand, this isn't Italian. And I'd be like, no, it's very much Italian.
We got a lot of that.
Right. It's very much Italian. And they'd be like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, like... And we'd be like, no, this dish is a dish from Calabria. Like, this is not, there's nothing, you know what I mean? Like, we haven't tweaked or done anything.
Yeah.
I mean, we do tweak and do a lot of things because we're not, like, we're also not running the kind of Italian restaurant. We're like, oh, we're going to run an Italian restaurant just to get in this, so we'll import all the ingredients. No, we we use local seasonal ingredients.
So you're filtering it through sort of like this Montreal aesthetic,
yeah, absolutely.
Right?
So, you know, like during you know, the springtime, you know, we serve Quebec asparagus and we serve Quebec snow crab.
By the way, Quebec asparagus, I had no idea it existed. And then it was at the Vin Papillon and they're like, oh, it's Quebec asparagus. Yeah. And I was like, okay, blew my mind.
Yeah, everywhere too.
It's crazy. It's now, in addition to the food, you have a solid wine program. Solid is probably underselling. You have an incredible wine program.
Thank you.
Can you talk about the importance of wine here? Because you could just do a very simple, you know, Italian wine, bring it in, but you go beyond that.
I think that, you know, going back to what I said earlier about it being, there being a long history of dining in the city. I mean, predominantly, obviously, it was French. But, like, along with you know, the French colonization and French cuisine, you had, like, French wine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, young people go out and drink wine here. And they always have. Like, we didn't have a cocktail scene until 7 years ago.
Sure.
You know, and actually, the funny thing is we set out to be one of the first restaurants. We wanted to be, like, a New York restaurant where you come in and you get a really good Manhattan or you get, you know, a really good Sazerac or, like, a classic cocktail done really well. And you have that before your meal because you could not actually get that. That did not exist.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And 7 years ago, there was one other restaurant, a restaurant called Sardine that no longer is around, that was doing great cocktails and good food.
But now everyone does it.
You know? But the cocktail scene didn't exist. So it was about wine. You know, I studied wine at the hotel school. And I developed a really, really, really great passion for it that went beyond just what was in the bottle, but who was behind the, you know. And I think that that's kind of how we've always run it, similarly to, like, how we work with local purveyors for food. It was like, well, let's work with, like, really great, you know, winemakers, people that are inspiring, that inspire us, that are inspired and make great wine that reflects where they're from and who they are.
And what's the Canadian wine scene like? Gotten better?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this.
It's not just ice wine anymore.
No, it's certainly not. And here's the thing that I want to talk about is I'm not super interested in the Canadian wine scene, but the Quebec wine scene is really exciting.
Yeah.
There are several wineries here that are working naturally. I mean, all of our winemakers work, I'm not dogmatic about being natural or, you know, anything, but we work with people that work really well and use, like, very little intervention, chemical intervention, or technology to make wine. And there are a few really phenomenal natural winemakers in Quebec that are making world-class wine right now. And one of them is about to be imported to New York by Zevro Vine.
Oh, shout out to Zev.
Yeah.
Shout out to Zev. Greg will have to save me a bottle for next time. So I would be remiss if we were going to talk about the food and wine to also talk about the music that's played here, because you guys have such a great playlist. Can you talk about setting the vibe and sort of what you play here in this restaurant?
Well, I think the first thing that's really striking when you walk into Norgray is that the room sets a tone already. You know, like...
I mean, we're sitting here with no music. And it's super vibey right now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's amazing. Like, Lisa designed the restaurant.
Beautiful.
She did an incredible job. And it's kind of a funny story. I had been away for, like, 3 weeks in New York doing stages and stuff. And I came back and kind of saw they had just hung the walls. And the walls, if you haven't been to Norgray, it's like a wood paneled box. And it kind of looks like your grandma's basement from the 70s. And I walked in and I nearly burst into tears. I was alone and I was like, oh my God, what the hell is this? And so I called Ryan in a panic, and he and Lisa were together, of course. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on? I can't believe this is happening. This place looks terrible. And then he was like, I think you should just talk to Lisa because, you know, she's the one with the plan.
She's got a vision.
She has a vision. And she described it to me and I was like, okay, well, if you think so. And of course, it's amazing and I love it.
Oh my God.
Because it's got that, like, loungy vibe.
But it's not heavy.
No.
Yeah. When I left Liverpool, I mean, I love Liverpool and I love Joe Beef and I think they do it so well. So I wanted to do something in the complete opposite direction.
Yes.
I didn't want the tchotchkes. I really like to keep it clean as possible. Like,
yeah.
Not a lot of stuff on the walls. Not a lot of stuff on the bar. And I worked with an amazing architect as well, Philip Hazen, who was awesome to work with. And we had a really interesting space. When we first walked in, the bathrooms were in the dining room, like right where the bar is right now.
Yeah.
And then the men's bathrooms were in the kitchen.
Yeah, boy.
Where the dish pit is.
Where the dish pit is now. Weird. So we had, we literally made a whole new restaurant. We took everything down and started fresh.
Now, talking about starting fresh, before we're out of time, I want to talk about the new spot, Elena.
Sure, Elena, yeah.
Elena, sorry.
No problem.
That's my American accent. Elena. Second restaurant, number two. What made you want to, one, open up another spot, and two, open up a pizza spot? And then three, what's the state of pizza in Montreal? We'll go one, two, three.
Okay. Well, we wanted to open a second restaurant, like, pretty much 6 months after opening Nora Gray. Even though we had no idea what was still in store for us in the evolution of Nora Gray.
Was this in, like, some, like, we've been working for 16 hours and we're sort of, like, sleep deprived, like, let's open up another one?
Well, we were just, like, addicted to the high. Yeah. Like,
it's addictive, you know? Yeah. It's a real rush. And getting to be creative in a different way from, you know, building a wine list or designing a menu or cooking or, you know, like, serving or designing cocktails. Being creative in, like, making design decisions and, like, you know, and actually physically getting to work and get dirty, you know, and, like, do something that's different, that's, that stuff is cool.
So instead of 6 months, it's about 6 years.
Yeah,
exactly.
When, you know, which, and you know, I think that this is finally the time that we are actually ready to take it on.
Yeah.
We were not ready before at all.
No, if we'd done it before, it would have been a disaster.
And so it's a pizza place, I assume wood fire burning oven?
Yeah, so we wanted, like, I like to play with fire. We have a charcoal grill at Nora Gray, and I've always, like, since I think I started doing canoe trips when I was, like, 13 or 14, and that's when I first started cooking over an open fire. And that was super addictive. And I mean, when I was a teenager, I definitely had no intention of becoming a chef, but that's where it started for me. And so now, like, the idea of opening a pizza place, we wanted to open a pizza place because your number three point, the state of pizza in Montreal is, like, okay. Like, the pizza's pretty delicious some places, but It's not what I want to eat.
It never, I mean, of all the things I think about Montreal, pizza's never on that list.
No.
Yeah.
Not now, maybe.
Like, think about what, you know, like, New York, it's a pizza city.
Sure.
And, like, you arguably could have some of the best pizza in the world is in New York. And, you know, we've made pilgrimages to New York to eat pizza. Just like before we opened this place, we could go to New York and go to, like, a place like Il Buco, you know, or Roberta's for, like, you know, for Italian food that was, you know, local, seasonal.
You got Roberta's, you know, for pizza, too.
Yeah, and, yeah. We did.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We have many times. Yeah. And Emma
I did a stage there. Yeah, before we opened Nora.
And I think that, I think that pizza, you know, here has always just been, like, pizza.
Yeah.
And people didn't apply, I mean, like, there's, you know, in our humble opinion, it's like we just wanted to take it, apply the same care that we put into our food here into pizza, and then, you know, get to do it in a space that is, like, cool and hip and fun and, you know, with good music and, you know, natural wine. And
yeah, awesome. And the idea behind Elena as well is the same kind of thing where it's like, we don't want to import all of the ingredients from Italy. We didn't import our oven from Italy. We had a Quebecois guy from up north came down and built this beautiful oven for us. Amazing. By hand. He cut all the stones himself. And we are going to try and use Quebec flour and Quebec-made mozzarella. And
we're doing naturally leavened pizza, which, you know, is not really a thing here.
That's true, too.
You know, and so...
So you guys are going to do the same thing that you did for sort of modern Italian food.
I don't know.
Or try to.
Hopefully. Yeah. You know, like, hopefully that's what the end result is. Like, it's like, you know, we just see it as an opportunity to do something that, although there are a lot of restaurants that serve pizza here, we feel that we're going to open a restaurant that isn't just a pizzeria either. We're hoping that we can, you know... satisfy some kind of, you know, niche that isn't quite there yet. Just like maybe like one of your hometown boys, Joe Badia, is done for pizza in Philly. You know what I mean? Like he.
Oh yeah, that
like,
place.
Like
is,
he. Like people talk about.
Some people might say the best pizza in America.
I have read that.
I have read that. Well, listen. Congratulations! I can't wait to come back. I need the new spot, and I can't wait to dine here while I'm in town. Awesome. If people want to find you online, where can they go? Because Instagram exists now, right?
Yeah, Instagram definitely exists. So,
Norgray.com
for our website, at Norgray Resto for Instagram, and at Elena Montreal Instagram for the new spot.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We have another song from the archives and then live performance on Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Sean, a.k.a. Harmar Superstar, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks, man.
Really happy that you're here. Really been great seeing your face around town.
Yeah, I'm a real local now.
Yeah, you're like a real local.
Yeah.
Like oh, hey, man, what's up?
I was a fake local for years not living here, but everyone thought I lived here, so it was kind of a secret of mine that I was secretly in L.A. just laying on my couch watching TV while everybody was talking about me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I really get this. What made the move a reality? What made you become a permalocal?
Well, to be completely frankly honest, I walked away from my house that I owned, and I just stopped paying, and I left. And I was like, it's time to change. I'm going to New York. The American dream.
Yeah.
I'm living the American dream.
Just leave it all behind.
Yeah.
Did you even lock the door when you left?
To the new country. I did, because I was going to squat there for a while, because I thought that would be a hilarious option, a chapter in my life that would be... good to
this is
about.
The other side of when you live on your passion, you just got to walk away from some things sometime.
But I was kind of like feeling creatively stagnant in LA after a while. Just the good weather constantly kind of actually grates on you after a while. For me, I like seasons, you know what I mean?
So. I would say that the most productive time is like when it's winter. You're hunkered down. I mean,
I'll write like 3 albums in the winter and like 3 scripts and then like live off of that for the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just get it done and like cave out and have a good time.
I mean, I have friends that have left LA and moved here, and then they'll go out to LA in like December for work, and they'll be like, I got nothing done. Like it was just nice enough that I just went out
The time. No, that's kind of how I felt, you know? And you're kind of just waiting for people to get off work at that point. When you're not working, it's kind of maddening.
You know? So you're out here.
Yes.
Which neighborhood did you just move to?
I live in Williamsburg.
Oh, welcome.
Graham Stop.
Yeah. Oh, we're all kind of right in the hood. And you just finished a record, right?
Yeah, well, I'm just putting the finishing touches on it now. I just signed with Cult Records, which is Julian Casablancas' new label. And he's going to finish the record with me. We're just doing a little bit more production on it. But
what's the process going to be finishing it? How's he stepping in?
Well, he's got, you know, he's got amazing vocal sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, we're going to go in and redo the main vocals just with some like little melody ideas, little tweaks here mm-hmm. and there, and then edit the songs a little bit and maybe do another one or two. But yeah.
And how did you record the record this time around?
I went to Austin, Texas, and I recorded with Jim Eno from Spoon, the drummer, at his place. It's a great studio there.
I mean, you've been at this for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's been amazing. I mean, I was saying, like, Power Lunch was, like, when I, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and that's, like, my third band that I toured. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Armor's, like, my third.
Shout out the first two.
Well, there's a band called Calvin Crime that was on AMREP when I was, like, 16 or 17.
Okay.
And we toured a lot. And then I have a band called Sha Na Na that I kind of periodically still do.
I feel like that's still, like, that's always, like, right on the edge.
Yeah.
Like it comes back in, cuts across Harmar, and like kind of goes out of focus, and then
it's
weaves back in.
It's be like, you know, whatever I feel like.
But Harmar is by and far the, you know, most prominent.
He's my breadwinner. He brings home the bacon.
Harmar, come on. Get out there. Go earn a little for daddy. Go take your pants off at a nightclub.
Yeah, exactly. People love it.
Well, let's get a song.
Okay.
Let's give a little reference.
All right, you want to hear a new one?
Yeah, let's hear a new one.
All right, this one's called Prisoner of Love.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
It should be playing. Yeah, okay. That was the beginning.
Without us talking.
Oh, okay.
Put me to the test, girl. I'm under arrest. No, we won't sleep till the streets are clean and the levee broke now. before smoke somehow. The results are in. Negatives are positive. 'Cause I'm a prisoner of love. When it rains, it pours. Oh, when I toughen up now, you'll take me back in your arms. Me behind bars. No more living large, girl. We're flirting with danger. Whoa. Dancing with strangers. Now it's just you and me, girl. Inmate number 715203. Yeah, you will be my captor. Sunshine, my big time, my laughter. 'Cause I'm a prisoner of love. When it rains, it pours. Oh, when I toughen up now, you'll take me back in your arms. Prisoner, yeah, I'm a prisoner of love. It's raining, it's pouring so hard. Yeah, we're not coming out now. No. Talk ain't always cheap now. I made a promise that I'm gonna keep somehow. Show you what I'm made of. A little prisoner, no prisoner, yeah, prisoner. Prisoner of love, whoa, whoa. When it rains, it pours. Yeah, when I toughen up now, won't you take me back in your arms? Prisoner of love, just a little prisoner of love. Yeah, when I toughen up now, you take me back in your arms.
Where'd they come from? Oh, I see them.
Oh, yeah. The Roberta's guys.
The Roberta's staff.
Roberta's staff, what's up, guys? Is that MC Todd out there? Yeah.
Yeah, it's all happening.
MC Todd.
Everyone's gathering.
Check the internet for that new release on MC Todd.
Polly G, I bet you didn't think I sounded like that.
Yeah, what did you think?
The word that came to mind is juxtaposition. I'm like, I did not expect to hear that.
Your eyes kind of lit up.
I said, we can have a two-hour discussion about music as soon as this is over. That's what I thought.
So your vocals have been lent to other projects. I feel like very lucky I got to see you tour with Gangs.
Oh, yeah, man.
Which was like
at
the Natural History Museum in L.A.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Okay. Love that record.
Oh man, it's
I put it on last night, and it was just like, fuck, this is one of the best records.
It is love making music.
It is love making music.
Everything's 69 BPMs.
Yeah, just talk to me about that project, because I've never got a chance to really sit down and
It's sort of like the brainchild of Ryan Olson, who produced like the Polisa album and a bunch of other great
stuff
out of Minneapolis. Yeah.
Incredible.
Channy, the singer, is actually in Gangs too. So he kind of put together the soft rock thing with a couple of the guys from Solid Gold in Minneapolis, and with the idea of getting Justin Vernon from Bon Iver involved, and sort of just became this behemoth, like, 25-member band. And it was really only supposed to be a project where they were going to put out the album, play one show with everybody there, and then break up. And it sort of took off so much that a tour happened, and then more tours, you know what I mean? Like, we did the whole country. I mean, we never really went out overseas, even though we're supposed to. But that's just because of Ryan's philosophies of wanting to take a cruise ship there. You know what I mean? Right. Like, he like He made these ridiculous demands that were great, but didn't happen.
Yeah. It's like, we'll buy you plane tickets, cruise ship.
Yeah. How about a cruise ship?
Tugboat.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to make this as weird and hard for you as possible.
But I mean, and what was touring like that? I mean, there really were like 25.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
well, for the touring band, it kind of was pared down to like 10 or 12 people most of the time. But like, there's always like two bass players and like 90 guitar players and saxes going. I mean, it's a very sax heavy band.
It's yeah. And how do you feel like that fits into like the overall like Harmar story or like projects like that?
It's cool. I mean, it was just like, it was perfect timing for me because like I was in between records of my own and it just sort of came up and I recorded this George Michael cover with them. Did one more try. It's like a bonus track that's out and we did it even slower than the original. So it's like 6 minutes long or something.
For anyone that wants to also hear it, the NPR music app has like a live Gangs concert on it, and like that was like kind of like, you know, scroll back
yeah,
really sweet. Really amazing.
Well, thanks.
So you moved here and you've started doing a podcast,
which is
really interesting, because I think it's like such an easy way for to have an output without having to put out music.
Yeah, but I was kind of curious. Yeah, like, it comes out every week. It's called Nocturnal Emotions. It's on Earwolf.
What is Earwolf?
Earwolf is earwolf.com is kind of like a, they're like a podcast sort of label, you know? Like they do Comedy Bang Bang and Who Charted and just so many shows.
Is it like all puns?
No. But you know, it is a lot of comedy guys.
Yeah.
Like I think they're working on like maybe a Mr. Show one or something. Like there's some cool stuff in the works. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I don't know.
Always promise things and you don't have to deliver. Who's going to check you?
I can't even deliver this promise.
Yeah.
I'm just talking out my ass here.
Obama's doing one.
Yeah, we got it's a Royal Rumble. Hulk Hogan's in there.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's really fun. Like, you know, it's just, they're long conversations about embarrassing moments in like my guests' lives. And it's sort of like, I run the gamut of guests of sort of anybody interesting, you know.
Who've past guests been?
I've had Macaulay Culkin, Ellen Page, Gavin McInnes, John Daly is going to be on this week. And I feature like some bands. I did like Minus the Bear and My Jerusalem last week, interviews with them. You know, MNDR, or just whoever.
You know,
whoever's around.
To fill that downtime.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, I should start a podcast.
Yeah,
or something.
But like, really, it's not that much work. You talk to somebody for like 45 minutes, tape it, and then make an intro and an outro each week. You know, it's like, it's kind of about a few hours of work a week, and it's very rewarding.
Do you have, besides embarrassing stories, like, is there, you know, something you try to convey from, you have a wide range of guests, you know?
Yeah.
Is there something you tried, like an overarching theme, or is it more just a conversation between two people?
It's a conversation. I mean, it normally gets kind of weird, and you know what I mean? Like, it's me, so it gets like a bit stony, you know what I mean? Or something. Yeah. Like, we like to go on tangents and riff. And no, but like, that's just sort of a jump off point. But I like to kind of explore the darker sides of people's lives, too, because that's like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the real stuff, and it's really interesting, and I don't know, the whole vibe of the thing is very nighttime.
I mean, that's the thing that we were saying before. It's like, yeah, everyone can be like, yeah, we like put out our demo and we got the record deal. It's like, you know, I just showed up to Hollywood and I got my first gig. It's like, what happened? It's like, well, there were 2 years of drug addiction and
I slept in a van for 3 years and ate cornflakes without milk.
Yeah, it's like, is that what you wanted? Oh, okay, that's the real thing. I mean, it's like we were saying before, it's to know those stories is, you know, to know that everyone goes through it, and like, kind of like, even when you're going through the shit, to know that other people are experiencing it makes it easier.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
No, you want to share a low?
I'm trying to think. I mean, there's so many. I mean, I think like every 3 years, like the money just runs out, and that's like not even really a low. I mean, it's kind of like, that's when I get motivated. I need it. I need to run out of my money so that I have like some sort of like survivalist instinct to like output like a script or like an album. And that's like where the actual songs come from, you know what I mean? Because if I was just happy and content all the time, I don't think I'd feel driven to make anything.
Do you want to play a song that came from a low?
Yeah, this one's real obvious. This is another new one called Wah Wah Wah. Let me all right, you ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
Wap 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 wap, woe is me, I missed another opportunity. Another day gone, I'm another day older, earth beneath my feet, only grows colder. I need to take a trip to the Golden Gate Bridge, contemplate my life and all the things I miss. Let loose my feet as my feet slip away. Whoa, die of shock before my legs break. Wap, 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 woe is me. I don't deserve another breath in me, you see. I squandered things, the lessons of lovers. Somebody have some mercy, help me put myself under. I was learning to tie knots down a fisherman's wharf. When the boys got the call, they had to go to war. They left me hanging how to tie this noose. Oh, it's just a little too loose. Yeah, I'd cut myself, but I'd never bleed. Just another failure got me in long sleep. To hide the pain building up in me, another secret that I need to keep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wah, 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 wah. Wah, 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 oh. Wah, 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 oh, 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 oh. Wah, 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 oh. Wah, 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 woe is me. I missed another opportunity, you see. Another day gone, it's another day older. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's about not being a crybaby.
Polly, comments?
I'm just blown away.
Well, thanks.
We have to get you on my playlist.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I'll bring in some stuff. I'll trade you for some pizza.
There you go. Oh,
there it is.
That's how it goes.
That's
down.
How you get out of the lows.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing.
Speaking of food, do you what's on the diet these days? What are you eating?
You know,
what have you found in Williamsburg that is like?
You know what the best is Mesa Cuyahuacan, that Mexican place. It's really good. Like super like LA level like Mexican food.
Where is it?
It's right on Graham Avenue, like right in between Consulier and Skillman.
Oh, that place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's next to
Saldemar.
Saldemar, and that place is great too.
That place is great.
Yeah. There's so much stuff over there. I don't know. I love eating at the Commodore too. It's that the hot breast and the nachos.
The Commodore. I mean, I think they're like one of the few restaurants that got like one like bar food that got one star.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Have you eaten there, the Commodore?
I have not.
The best fried chicken.
Yeah, it's right across the street from St. Assam. And the nachos.
The nachos are they're like Austin, Texas, real queso nachos.
I think that's
like,
what we ate on that night out before 4th of July. We started with the nachos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And which are just fantastic.
They're so good.
So what's coming up next? So the record's going to finish. And
yeah, well, that'll come out in probably March. I don't know. I'm just writing some TV stuff right now and trying to get that going through by the time.
What's the TV stuff?
I'm developing a show. I've been developing a show for HBO for like a few years that wasn't going to get shot, and now it might. Everything's so weird on TV. It's slow. So, whatever happens, whatever we do, it'll come out in like 2 years. So. Not even worth really mentioning, but like.
Promises. Obama will have a guest.
Paid a little bit. Yeah. You know, it's here and there. But yeah, no, just working on the podcast, be playing shows. I'm going to go to Fun Fest like, in a couple weeks. Sweet.
Yeah. Which it really is like one of the most fun
yeah,
festivals.
Yeah, and the lineup's great. Run DMC is playing. Yeah. I'm psyched about that.
Japan Droids.
It's just so good. There's so many. X is playing all of Los Angeles, I think, or Wild Gift, one of the two.
Oh, really?
I love both of those albums.
I mean, just, you know, we were talking about it before. You're going to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash tonight, right?
Yes, I am.
What album are they playing?
Their first album, their self-titled album.
I mean, it's just get the fans what they want. But you can play a few new ones.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
I think, like, you know, yeah, do an encore and play, like, five more. But you do the album that people want to hear.
Yeah.
You know?
And then they can leave or the true fans can stay. I will say this, though. I just saw the David Byrne St. Vincent, their new show, and they published a new record, and it's incredible.
I want to see. I mean, they're both so good. I can only imagine it's, together.
It's so good. And the choreography, and, I mean, it's just really one of the best shows I've seen, and you're just like, and they weave in their old stuff with the new stuff. And
that's awesome.
They do it really well.
I try to do like, you know, I try to mix it up, do two old ones and a new one, or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like throughout the show, keep people like perked up from.
But But I mean, your music is also like really like I had never heard those two songs.
Yeah,
and, like they're also like upbeat songs,
Yeah,
it's not like, hey, here's a new one. It's super slow. It's 6 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Please don't go to the bar.
I'm not pulling too many punches. Yeah. I mean, it's vibe-wise, a little different, but it really does. Yeah, it fits in with the set really
well. You know what I loved about that song? It sounds so upbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
So down.
That's my favorite. Like I love like Gilbert O'Sullivan. Like Alone Again Naturally is one of my favorite songs, and it's really poppy. But then you listen to the lyrics, and they're like the most.
You're like, oh shit!
Down. This guy's gonna jump off or something. You know what I mean?
there's a great song by the Style Council.
Which one?
I forget the name of the title now. I can't believe it's not coming to me. I just absolutely love it. But it was a very angry song, and it was just so happy.
Yeah.
Another great one is Bluebird by Leon Russell.
Yeah. Harry Nilsson does that a lot too. Like he's kind of the master of that stuff. Those are my dudes.
Well, I want to get one more song in, but I want to give people the nuts and bolts of where to find you, where to get the podcast.
Oh, yeah. You can just go to earwolf.com and look for Nocturnal Emotions with Harmar Superstar, or go to iTunes music, or go to podcasts in iTunes and then look under the music category, and it should be there. You can just look it up on iTunes, I guess, too. So, yeah, you can subscribe. It's free. Get it every week.
Website, Twitter.
Awesome. Yep. Or just follow me at Harmar Superstar, you know, and sort of thing. I update every week on Twitter where to find it, too.
And almost every day on Instagram as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't say get the Gangs record. Get a Harmar record.
Get it, yeah.
And get a Gangs record.
Yeah, definitely.
Find a loved one.
We're working on some sort of like other projects, spin-off things right now that are happening.
I would say research the Gangs record because like Pulika's on there, isn't like what other
marijuana guys from Marijuana Death Squads, Megafon, Bon Iver, a lot of that band. There's so many people have played in it. Rosebuds. I mean, there's just like it's just people from all over the country.
You could really get like a good starting point. Anyway, well, thanks for being on.
Oh, yeah, man.
Paulie, thank you, as always.
Yeah, Paulie.
Great pleasure.
And you're going to take us up with one more track?
Yeah, I'll do, I'm going to do Tall Boy, the single off my last album.
I'm on fire, baby. There's no place to go, so shed your clothes. We'll stop, drop, and roll.
I need a tall boy. Crack it open with me, don't be shaken. Come on, let out the steam, where's my tall boy? Satisfy my needs, feel like drinking. Come on, get inside me. Me and my girls will roll up. You know you wanna check us out. Beats in the backseat blow up. Turn the whole scene. Still talking shit about Monday. The weekend is over now. Not meeting no one halfway. Amateurs, get the hell. I don't see no ashtray, so I'm gonna use the ground. Ladies' eyes call for hairspray. Back door is open. You all know the party's jumping. Everything is going for free. Gonna grab a piece of something. Take it home, I need a tall boy. Where's my tall boy? Think I'm falling in love now. This is nothing but pure lust. Wanna use you up and get out like the kids. I crumble, puppy eyes are broken. I'm not trying to be mean. Queen of the party spoken. Jump on the floor with me. Yeah, the DJ is killing my groove. Just got the text you sent me. Time to make up. Making the crew back to my house. Spread it through the VIP. All the pretty people line up the couch. Till we get proud. I need a tall boy. Where's my tall boy? Shed your clothes. We'll stop, drop, and roll. I need a tall boy. Crack it open with me. Don't be shaking. Come on, let out the steam. Where's my tall boy? Satisfy my needs, feel like freaking. So come on, get inside. I need a tall boy. Crack it open with me, don't be shaking. Come on, let out the steam. Where's my tall boy? Satisfy my needs, feel like drinking. Come on, get inside me.
Oh yeah.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.